Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid. Tom Turnwald runs an Ohio millwork company that was started by his father and employs his kids.
I'm in favor of wind farms because I'm committed to attracting talent to our community, and the school districts with wind turbines get resources that can make a huge difference in kids' lives.
Since 2012, an Avangrid wind farm has strengthened the economy and contributes millions to the community each year. To learn more about where energy meets humanity, visit avangrid.com. That's avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, James Comey says he took it as a command. President Trump says he never even said it. The one word that an obstruction of justice case could turn on. And the U.S. military has waged cyber attacks on Iran's nuclear program and North Korea's missile systems. So why is it struggling to hack into the low-tech computers of ISIS? It's Monday, June 12th.
Let's go to the Flynn issue.
When former FBI Director James Comey testified in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee last week, he clearly stated under oath that he believed President Trump had asked him to shut down an FBI investigation into his former National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn.
And so that's why I understood him to be saying that what he wanted me to do was drop any investigation connected to Flynn's account of his conversations with the Russians.
That testimony reignited questions about whether the president has obstructed justice. Some of that could hinge on word choice. One word in particular.
Michael, I think the word is hope.
There's 28 words there that are in quotes, and it says, quote, I hope, this is the president speaking, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go.
Adam Liptak, why did the word hope come up in this testimony?
Well, there was questioning about whether anyone had ever been convicted of obstruction of justice merely because they'd hoped for an outcome.
Right.
Do you know of any case where a person has been charged for obstruction of justice, or for that matter, any other criminal offense, where they said or thought they hoped for an outcome?
I don't know well enough to answer. And the reason I keep saying his words is I took it as a direction.
So there's two things to say about this. One is, it's perfectly possible to convey using the word I hope to a subordinate, you know, who's maybe hoping to keep his job, that that's something you really want to have happen. It may be something you're directing to have happen.
I mean, this is the President of the United States with me alone saying, I hope this. I took it as, this is what he wants me to do. Now, I didn't obey that, but that's the way I took it.
You may have taken it as a direction, but that's not what he said.
Correct. He said,
I hope.
Those are exact words,
okay.
Correct.
You don't know of anyone that's ever been charged for hoping something. Is that a fair statement?
I don't, as I sit here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And the second thing to say about it is it's just not so. There have been prosecutions involving statements phrased in terms of hope that have led people to be convicted or serve longer sentences for obstruction of justice. So the entire premise of the discussion was wrong.
And what were those cases where the word hope was used to prove obstruction of justice?
So there was a case of a bank robber who had a girlfriend, Confederate, who it looked like the prosecution was going to flip. And it mattered in the bank robbery whether the bank robber was carrying a knife, carrying a weapon, because that subjects him to an enhanced sentence. And he says to the girlfriend, I hope and pray you don't tell them about any weapon. That would be very bad. And that was thought to be enough to enhance the sentence, to increase the sentence for obstruction of justice. And that sounds right to me, but it's a good illustration of why the words don't cure the problem. And, of course, you want to put it in the complete context of the body language and the tone of voice and the circumstances. So does it help him a tiny bit that he didn't say it in so many words but couched it a little bit? It helps him a tiny bit. I used to be a libel lawyer, and sometimes people would say, you can't sue me for libel because I said, in my opinion, so-and-so is a child molester. And the courts say there's no magic words. You can't sort of add three words to the beginning of a sentence and get rid of the whole case.
I can't decide if that's a comfort or not. Adam, how much of this comes down to interpretation of this single word hope? James Comey said that the context and the president's words and his position and authority led him to think
the president wanted him to drop the investigation.
I think quite a lot of it hinges on what you understand hope to mean in the circumstances.
And as you perceived it, while it was a request that you hoped you did away with it, you perceived it as an order, given his position, the setting, and the like, and some of the circumstances.
Yes.
And proving obstruction of justice does require that the person corruptly intended to interfere with the legal proceeding. And if a jury were to believe that President Trump, in this setting, one-on-one with his FBI director, was just musing about what would be a happy state of the world if the investigation was to go away, that's one interpretation. Another is that in that setting, you're probably saying it with some purpose.
When a president of the United States in the Oval Office says something like, I hope, or I suggest, or would you, do you take that as a directive?
Yes. Yes. It rings in my ear as kind of, well, no one rid me of this meddlesome priest.
I was just going to quote that in 1170, December 29, Henry II said, who will rid me of this meddlesome priest? And then the next day he was killed.
But I also think it's one element of a sequence of events that, if you believe Mr. Comey's version, is fairly damning. I mean, there are questions about whether you can indict and prosecute a sitting president. Mm-hmm. But if this were anyone else and Comey's account is correct, the elements of obstruction of justice seem pretty closely met.
And walk me through why you think that is.
So, again, I'm going to take Mr. Comey's version of events, his word for it. Mm-hmm. But he said the president asked for his loyalty in the context of a discussion about whether he would keep his job. Mm-hmm. He said he hoped that the inquiry into the Flynn matter would go away. When it didn't, he fired the director. Mm-hmm. And then he tweeted out, and this also, you know, could have the overtones of a threat, that Mr. Comey had sure better hope there are no tapes.
Right.
I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Now, all of that taken together might well be enough to satisfy these criminal statutes that are written in quite abstract terms. They say you can't corruptly obstruct, influence, or impede any official proceeding. Would it convince a jury? Maybe, maybe not. Is it enough to go to a jury? Mm-hmm. Most criminal lawyers might say yes.
Adam, let's just step back for a second. Have other presidents been charged with obstruction of justice?
The two most recent impeachment proceedings, or in Nixon's case, a run-up to them, both involved obstruction of justice. And neither one was terribly different from what we're talking about here. Nixon was accused of having the CIA tell the FBI to stand down on a Watergate investigation. Mm-hmm. And that tracks fairly closely the kind of talk we're seeing now. You know, leaning on the government to stop an investigation was thought by members of the Judiciary Committee to potentially amount to an impeachable offense. And Bill Clinton, when he was impeached, the counts against him were perjury and also inducing others to lie in a civil case and grand jury investigation. So there again, you have the same kinds of obstruction of justice concepts mm-hmm. floating around in the impeachment context.
In those cases, were there any specific words that were parsed as intensely as we're now parsing the word hope from President Trump?
I seem to remember Clinton testimony about the meaning of what the word is and
right.
things like that.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes.
If is means is and never has been, that is not that's one thing. If it means there is none, that was a completely true statement.
As you roll up your sleeves and you get into the particulars of this stuff, people will bear down on language to an extraordinary degree, and the attention hope is getting now may just be the beginning.
Adam, is there already an obstruction of justice case being built against the president, if you know?
Oh, I certainly don't know. And there's two ways to answer that, Michael. Mm-hmm. So is the special prosecutor going to look at this question? Very likely.
Mm-hmm.
Is the special prosecutor going to do anything about it in light of the general consensus that a sitting president cannot be indicted? Other special prosecutors have stepped back. You know, they've looked at the question and they've decided that if something was to be done about it, the correct route is impeachment, not criminal prosecution. So Ken Starr didn't mm-hmm. indict Bill Clinton. Leon Jaworski didn't indict Richard Nixon. And former Director Mueller has hired very good lawyers, some of the best lawyers in the country, to look at this question. But listen, it's very early. Mueller just got the job, so it's very early days.
Right. President Trump has now publicly stated that he did not say, I hope you let go of this investigation into Michael Flynn.
He did say under oath that you told him to let the Flynn, you said you hoped the Flynn investigation, you could let,
I didn't say that.
So he lied about that.
Well, I didn't say that. I mean, I will tell you, I didn't say that.
So how much is a written memorialized record, these memos that James Comey wrote, which claimed that that is exactly what President Trump said, how much weight do they carry against a president who may be denying that he said it?
So if there are no tapes and all we have is a contemporaneous memo from an FBI agent who's also the director of the FBI, and these guys are trained to memorialize conversations with people they interview, versus somebody with a recollection backed up by nothing of what was said, many people might go with the FBI director.
So he said those things under oath. Would you be willing to speak under oath to give your version of those events?
100%.
And is it important that the president says he'll testify under oath?
Yeah. That is not what any good criminal lawyer would tell his client. I'll be surprised if it comes to pass.
And Adam, to bring it back to this single word, could this whole case end up resting on the word hope? Could that one syllable end up being the battleground?
It's entirely possible, yeah.
Adam, thank you very much.
Great to be here as always.
We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.
Many think of beauty and health as disconnected, but beauty and wellness are really two sides of the same coin. Hello, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the final episode of This Is Not a Beauty podcast, we'll hear from a cancer survivor, an anthropologist, and a carer of the elderly about the relationship between beauty and health. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform.
I use New York Times Cooking at least 3 to 4 times a week.
I love sheet pan bibimbap. It said 35 minutes. It was 35 minutes.
The cucumber salad with soy, ginger, and garlic. Oh my God, that is just to die for.
This turkey chili has over 17,000 5-star ratings. So easy, so delicious.
The instructions are so clear, so simple, and it just works.
Hey, it's Eric Kim from New York Times Cooking. Come cook with us. Go to nytcooking.com.
We also recognize that cyber can be a tool that we can use against our enemies. So, for example, right now, and I can't go into details in this setting, but Cybercom is operating against ISIL.
It's been more than a year since the Pentagon announced it was opening a new line of attack against ISIS, a cyber offensive targeting its computers.
Why should they be able to communicate? Why should they be using the internet? These are people who are not part of the free, open culture that the internet supposed. This is evil, and the internet shouldn't be used for that purpose. We can do that.
But even the most sophisticated of the operations the U.S. has conducted so far has been something of a disappointment. David Sanger, what was Operation Glowing Symphony?
Operation Glowing Symphony, which still operates, though perhaps under a different name, is, Michael, an effort to get inside of ISIS's computer networks. The idea is that here is a fairly low-tech Islamic extremist terror group. Mm-hmm. How hard can it be to go in and manipulate their data on their laptops, on their cell phones, make them show up at the wrong places, delete some of their data, interfere with their bank accounts, interfere with their propaganda? You know, on the surface, it sounds like a fairly straightforward job. It just turns out that that's a lot more complicated than it might first sound.
And why is that?
What they quickly discovered was that when you bring down propaganda, recruiting material, mm-hmm. even a communications channel that the Islamic State may be running over an encrypted app, that they pop up a week or two later from a different server in a different place. So you're constantly playing this game of whack-a-mole.
David, it feels like every time we talk to you, you're reporting on some extraordinary effort by the United States to get inside an adversary's computer system with a fair amount of success. In the past, you've talked to us about how we've broken into Iran's nuclear program or about how we have infiltrated North Korea's missile launch program. So why is there so much frustration and why is it so difficult for our cyber folks to get inside ISIS?
It's one thing to get inside. It's another thing to stay inside. So what's the difference between, say, that Iran operation or Korea mm-hmm. operation and going after ISIS? In Iran and Korea, you're going after pieces of equipment.
Internet security agents say Iran's infrastructure, including its main nuclear power plant, is being targeted by a new and dangerously powerful cyber worm.
Current and former U.S. military officials have said the U.S. has a program to disrupt North Korean missiles with cyber attacks.
That equipment is linked in some way to computer systems. The Iran centrifuges were run by computer controllers. The Korean missiles have to communicate back in some way or another to their bases. There's always a way for the equipment, the hardware, to go interface with some controlling device. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you've got a nuclear centrifuge operation that you built under the desert, it's not like if the Americans get into it, you say, okay, next week I'll build another one. These things take years to go put together. Whereas if you're ISIS, you say, okay, you got into that computer network or that laptop or that set of phones, we'll move on. And that's the nature of the difficulty. It's cheap to move on and it's fairly fast. You might stop them from recruiting for a few weeks. You might even stop them from communicating for a few weeks. But they're going to find another way because the equipment is essentially cheap. And the number of different channels that you can go after are limitless. That's why drug dealers and terrorists have burner phones, right? I mean, a phone that you use once and you throw away.
So have there been any successes in the U.S. cyber campaign against the Islamic State?
Well, there have been some. The Israelis had a really interesting success. We're told that it was the Israelis who pierced the bomb-making operations in ISIS and figured out that ISIS was working away on finding ways to turn the battery cavities in laptop computers into explosives that wouldn't show up on an airport X-ray. And you may remember that this issue came up a few weeks ago when the Department of Homeland Security banned carrying laptops on airplanes from, I think, 10 nations. This was also part of the intelligence that President Trump talked about with the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, and the Russian ambassador, another Sergei Kislyak, when they visited the Oval Office, a visit I bet he wishes now he had decided not to host. And the accusation was that he told them too much about what the U.S. knew on this laptop operation and violated national security or at least classification of data that came from Israel. And this became a very sore point with Prime Minister Netanyahu, although they tried to paper it over during the president's recent visit to see Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel.
Is part of the reason why that disclosure by President Trump was such a big deal that such infiltrations of ISIS are so rare and hard fought, and then to have the president potentially talking about it out of school?
That's right. All of these penetrations are pretty temporary, and that's why we're very careful about the amount of detail we provide when we write about them. We usually talk to the government. They're not happy that we're talking to them about classified operations, mm-hmm. but we try not to get in the way of an ongoing intelligence operation. So I guess the question is, could the revelation have told ISIS something they didn't already know? My suspicion is that once ISIS saw the ban on laptops get announced, they figured out that there had to be either an electronic or human source. And sometimes that's useful to people because if you can make a country paranoid that they've been penetrated, they begin to get suspicious of everybody on the inside they're working with. In Iran, there were scientists who were fired from the nuclear program once it became clear that their U.S. was going after the program. In North Korea, we think the same thing happened. So it's not that all disclosures are bad. Sometimes they actually help you disrupt a terror ring.
David, is it fair to say that the U.S. cyber warfare program against ISIS is failing?
I think it's fair to say that it's not achieving what its early hopes were. And that may simply be because we're new to the issue of how you best get inside human-dominated networks, manipulate data, and do it in a way that is subtle enough to be effective but not clear enough to be countered by the other side. But frankly, anything involving human beings gets more complicated than anything involving pure hardware. So it shouldn't be surprising that this is difficult to do.
David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here's what else you need to know today. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has agreed to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday, where he'll face questions about his contacts with Russian officials during the 2016 campaign and his role in investigating Russian meddling in that election. Sessions has since recused himself from the Russia investigation, but nevertheless played a role in firing James Comey, a decision that led to the appointment of a special counsel.
How would you characterize Attorney General Sessions' adherence to his recusal, in particular with regard to his involvement in your firing, which the president has acknowledged was because of the Russian investigation?
That's a question I can't answer. I think it's a reasonable question. If, as the president said, I was fired because of the Russia investigation, why was the attorney general involved in that chain? I don't know. And so I don't have an answer for the question.
Ian.
Would you like the state visit to be called off?
Well, my position remains the same. You know, I don't think we should be rolling out the red carpet to the president of the USA in the circumstances where his policies go against everything we stand for.
The Times reports that President Trump may cancel or postpone a trip to Britain planned for later this year amid a backlash over comments he made following last week's terror attack in London. Trump is said to have offended British leaders by inaccurately claiming that London's mayor, Sadiq Khan, had played down the danger of terrorism. Khan is calling for the trip to be canceled. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.